episode 335 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So, M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser, and you can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and I am not pregnant with Nick Cannon's baby. And you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
I am stunned into silence, and I want to follow up on that. So let's put a pin in that for a second. Yes. And I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So, Megan, let's revisit this this pregnancy scandal. What's going on?
Do you not know about it?
I don't know anything. So no.
Oh my God,
assume I know nothing.
With it all day. He's had 4 babies in the last year with 3 different women. Wow. I think. Yeah, it's like. It's crazy. And he has 7 kids total because he's got twins with Mariah Carey. And then he's got, how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's another one in between. But he has a 4. And then, well, one of his partners just gave birth a couple days ago. And then today, another woman came out saying she was pregnant with his baby. It's insane.
Wow. My favorite. One of my favorite memes is of a basketball player like leaning down on a ledge. It's like he looks really tired, and the caption is Nick Cannon getting ready for his 17th gender reveal party this year.
It's just wild. Like for the longest time, I felt like, you know, I mean, he was with Mariah, and it's just kind of crazy how like 4 kids in a year is. Really, it's got to be a world record or something. I don't know.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah.
Happy summer.
Yeah. Happy summer to you.
This is, we are recording on the summer solstice. So hopefully everybody's at home and been watching Midsummer and is running around naked in the yard or doing something with bears or with flowers in your hair. I don't know. I haven't seen Midsummer, so I have no idea what's going on. But all I know from Twitter is that...
Wait, you haven't seen Midsummer?
No, because I really hate the director's movies. Not that they're not well-made.
That's the best one, though. That's the one to see, really? I think. Yes, because I didn't care. I didn't care for the first one. What was it?
Midsummer was the first too.
Wait, what was the first one he did? With
Hereditary.
I didn't care for that one. I thought that I didn't get it. The second one, Midsummer, is really good. I think you'd like it. It's okay. It's okay. I mean, and that's coming from somebody who hates long movies, but I think it's worth it.
Well, now I haven't gone back to see it because I know everything that happens on it thanks to Twitter, so...
But not you don't sound like you don't know everything. Like, the first opening sequence is really dark.
I will get around to watching it because I know it is arguably supposed to be a great movie, and he is a very good director. He creates a vibe that just does not gel with me.
This one's much better than Hereditary, I think.
Okay.
And I think you'd like it better too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I do love Florence Pugh, particularly how not diverse, but how just she takes on so many different character types, and I can't ever tell. Everything that she plays is different from each other, and I think that's brilliant.
She kind of reminds me of Kate Winslet in that respect, because Kate Winslet, like, does that, I feel like, where she's just like, I'll take, especially, like, in the mid-2000s, like, early 2000s, like, she would just take on, I'm going to play a manic pixie dream girl, but not really. Now I'm going to play... Right. Mother to like Finding Neverland, and you know, she just does a lot of different things.
Right. Well, I've seen Black Widow. I can talk about it on social media. I can't do a review of it, but I've seen Black Widow. She is absolutely by hands down the best thing in that movie, and she steals the movie from Scarlett Johansson 100%, and it just makes, and she does it so effortlessly. That it just makes me think, God, this girl can do anything.
Yeah.
Except play a bitchy 12-year-old as she did in Little Women.
Oh, I still haven't seen that one.
I kind of didn't like that. I don't know. It was an odd stylistic choice to make. because she didn't look 12 and then all of a sudden she was 16, 18, whatever. Anyway, I don't want to talk about Little Women. It's sort of scarred, but I feel scarred from all of that, from that Oscar year, Joey. I'm sure you feel the same way.
What's Little Women? I don't know what you're talking about. Is that a new movie?
Eternal Sunshine your mind of Little Women?
I have had such a rage stroke after that movie. There's one movie every goddamn year where everyone's just like, if you don't like it, you're bleh! And I'm just like, all right, there's one every fucking year. And I'm going to say, you faggots on Twitter, ruin it for everyone. So,
you know, it still happens that someone,
I like the movie. That's it.
Yeah. Sorry, I mean, the movie's fine. It still happens on Awards Daily in a comment somewhere. And I don't read the comments often, but it still happens like 2 years later, 3 years later, how long it's been since Little Women came out, that someone will comment about Sasha and Greta Gerwig and Little Women.
Oh my God.
At least once a month.
That's wild.
It's crazy. You know what else is wild? This is going to be a brilliant segue. You know what else is wild? I heard two things about Jean Smart this weekend that made me, as soon as I saw Hacks, I knew she was going to win Best Actress. That continued once everybody else started to see it, and everybody else, you know, loved it too, because sometimes I see things on screeners and I'm like, I love this. And then all of a sudden, 60% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, politician.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I still love the pilot. I still love the pilot. The rest of the thing is trash, and the second season is the worst thing I've ever seen Ryan Murphy do, and that says a lot. But two things about Jean Smart. Number one, and this, I know, Megan, you haven't seen any of it yet.
No, I haven't seen.
Okay. But nothing. Joey, how far did you get? Did you watch the whole thing?
I'm sorry. Which show? Hold on.
Hacks.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the whole thing. Love it.
Okay. So two things about her. There's a segment where a character visits a wax figure of Jean Smart's character. That is actually played by Jean Smart. The wax figure is Jean Smart playing a wax version of herself.
Wow.
That is fucking amazing. Number two, the last episode of the first season, and I'm not spoiling anything, but there is a funeral in the last episode where Jean Smart speaks at that funeral. She filmed that scene a week after her own husband died.
I read this too. Yeah, I read that.
She is a consummate pro, and she deserves every award for the show.
That's a good narrative. I need to see it.
Haven't watched it.
I am going to bitch slap you right now. Hey, I am still watching Underground
Railroad. Later, and Megan's going to slap me across the face. I'm like, what was that for? She's going to be like, for that comment about Hack.
I am still watching Underground Railroad one episode per week. I'm keeping up with it. I'm four in.
I've got to watch episode four. I will do that this week. That's spoiler alert on my flash forward. I'm going to watch Underground Railroad episode four.
I will say it's an episode dedicated to Ridgeway, and which I think is a choice because I don't know. I just feel like I don't want to hear about the white dude. Like keep it away for. It's all about him. I don't even think Cora's in it. Yeah, she's not in it.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, episode four about like sort of like I've gotten through that episode. It's like it's sort of you get to see him as a young man.
It's a detour, yeah. But I don't know. I see why he did like Barry Jenkins or like they included it, but I also like I don't know. Why give them any more time? Like, come on, because especially since there was momentum there because something happens in episode three where you're like, oh my god, I want to see what happens next. So now I got to wait another week, which would have been nice, though, if they rolled it out week to week. It gives you some momentum.
Which is what that show lacked. Not quality. Mm-hmm. It lacked momentum.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's just like, here we go. We're going to like poop out this whole series that is like, I mean, that's what I should just call now when they release a whole bunch of episodes, pooping out a whole series. That it should be, you shouldn't be doing it. You should, you know, one poop at a time. Okay. And I'm not drinking, believe it or not. It's just water. I think I'm just in a weird mood.
Well, that's okay. All right. So the main topic for this week's podcast is Annie Murphy's star vehicle, Kevin can fuck himself. Of course, Annie Murphy recently won Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series at the last year's Emmy Awards. Historically, as a part of the historic Schitt's Creek sweep, and this was her first major project following that win and the culmination of the Schitt's Creek run. And it really would give us, a lot of people were anticipating this because it gives you an idea of what she could do outside of that show. And we will talk about that and what we think about her, what we think about the show, what we think about Kevin, and all of that. So you guys ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to quickly cue this up and then I will turn it over to Megan because I haven't heard your opinion on this yet. Oh. Kevin Can Fuck Himself is AMC's new show. It debuted last week on AMC Plus, the first two episodes, and as we're recording tonight on June 20th, debuts on AMC so that everybody can watch it. And it's essentially a schizophrenic television show in that half of it is filmed as a takeoff on the CBS traditional sort of working class sitcom, like Kevin Can Wait. Anything starring Kevin James. It's what it looks like. It's a single camera sitcom with, you know, a very bright CBS-y type production design set. And then anytime Kevin's wife, played by Annie Murphy, her name is Allison, anytime she walks through a door, then she cuts into what we'll call the real world, which looks like Breaking Bad or like a meth house out of Breaking Bad or something like that. It's very gritty. It's very dark. It's actually one of the things I love the most about the show is that revisiting the same sets through different viewpoints, I find really compelling. And I can't wait to talk to, or for us, one of us to talk to the production designer when the time comes, because I think that would be a really interesting conversation. And she struggles with the way that she is treated on this show. So if you know the Kevin Can Wait or Kevin James type sitcoms, you know, it's all about the hilarious, quote unquote, slobby guy who, and the put upon wife who puts up with all his garbage, even though in the real world, probably none of this would, I don't know, maybe it does. I'd like to hope that this is not a real world scenario, but what is her life like outside of that sitcom? What is her life like in the real world? What kind of hopes and dreams and thoughts and feelings? How does she really feel about her husband? How does she feel about this sitcom world in which she's been plucked? Don't make no mistake. It's not a meta show. So it's not, she doesn't think she's in a sitcom. It's just, you view things differently through a different lens both ways. And so that's what the show is about. So Megan, I want to turn it over to you to find out what you thought about Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
I really enjoyed this. I think it kind of made me think of what I thought WandaVision would be more of. Kind of, you know, playing with sitcoms, and it kind of reminded me of that. And there are things I really did like about WandaVision. Talk about production design with that show, and just playing around with these ideas. But I really liked, as somebody who's loves Everybody Loves Raymond, and I love King of Queens. You know, this made me look at those shows differently because of the long-suffering wife on that show, and like how, you know, we see on King of Queens, we see that show basically through Kevin James's character Doug's eyes, for the most part, and he does a lot of things to fuck shit up on that show, but we're like, oh, but he's lovable, and I do love Kevin James, but he's lovable, and you know, he can get a pass on these things. But you know, when you put it into the context of, you know, real life and what this character Allison has to deal with, which a lot of these stories felt like, they feel like a real sitcom. I have to give the writing credit because they did not make it not funny. You know what I mean? Like, they could have easily just had it be very generic and very like stupid, but actually the Kevin side of the show feels like a real sitcom that people might watch, to be honest. Like, there are lots of funny lines on that side. Like I think at one point, Kevin's dad, who's always there, like, there's an ambulance that goes by and he goes running to the window. He's like, is it for me? Like, it was just funny. The way the delivery was great. But I love that first of all, Annie Murphy is really getting to flex her acting muscles that we maybe, I see little glimmers of Alexis in there and in some of her mannerisms, but Alexis is mostly gone. But I think she's really fantastic. And I've seen some reviews say that they just don't know how long this show can go. And maybe that's the case, but I'm still pretty interested in what it's doing. I think it's just a really interesting take on classic sitcoms, especially since for years people have always wondered, like, they always talk about the schlubby guy that's with the hot wife. Like, that's basically a CBS trope. And, you know, this is kind of poking fun at that, which I really like. Sorry, that was long-winded.
No, I'm glad you loved it. I'm glad you liked it. I think this is one of the best shows that I've seen all year, hands down. I would absolutely put this up there with Mare of Easttown and Hacks, just in how much this surprised me at how really great it is. I absolutely agree with what you said about the comedy. The sitcom is written like a true sitcom. It doesn't feel like drama writers are just taking a stab at a sitcom. It is, they've done their homework and they have written funny things. That totally works. And then, where she's going, I didn't quite know where she was going in the dark world and the real world, the darker parts of the show. But it is very slowly moving toward a very dark place. Not unlike something like Breaking Bad. Like, she doesn't have cancer or anything like that, but she is making choice. She is not a perfect person outside of this. That is one thing that I love about it too, is that she is not a saint that is just being put upon by Kevin, quote unquote. She is doing bad things or trying or going down a bad path. And I think there's a lot of things that you can equate to something like Breaking Bad, but I do see, I mean, that show went on forever. I mean, it broadened, right. it just kept growing its circle again and again and again. It just kept broadening its scope. And I can absolutely see this doing that. I think there's a whole ton of sitcom tropes you can play with and then juxtapose those against, reality, quote unquote. But Joey, tell me what you
thought about that.
Joey, tell us what you thought.
Sure. Yeah, I love it. I think it's really good. I sort of go along with what Megan was saying, that I agree with it. I feel like the two worlds are so fully realized that they feel like every time we go to the other show or like we leave a show, it sort of feels like we're going to a commercial almost. I never doubt one side versus the other. And I'm very interested to see where it goes. I've seen two of the three. I know another one is out now, but I've only seen the first two. But it's so, it's really rich. And I feel like this sounds so cheesy, but I actually thought while I was watching it, you know how people, you know, the phrase that we don't really use as much anymore of like the golden age of television, but I feel like this show's ambitions lie within that realm of what it's doing, because it's entertaining on both sides. It's pushing Annie Murphy in a way that we haven't seen her before. I do agree that there are some, it's sort of like the way that she moves her hands or smiles. Yes. I can see like a little bit of Alexis.
Yeah, just a glimmer.
It's not distracting. It's not bad. And then I actually thought, I was like, oh, this is such like a sort of meta thing that I was like, this is what, like, when they talk about ambitious television, I think that's what this is. I think of it's elevated. It's sort of referencing itself. It's well written. I'm so compelled about the relationships between the show. And I will say something I'm sure we're going to talk about. I want to help her kill that motherfucker because I can't stand him. I do think the thing that is interesting is, as it jumps back and forth, I haven't gotten to that part yet. We don't see Kevin in the real world. I think we've only seen him once within the first two episodes, but he doesn't have any lines. It's after that like beer pouring thing that we keep coming back to, where he's just sitting there. But I'm very interested in sort of the show is very much a perception through Allison, so. Mm-hmm. It made me wonder, since it is her experience, like not questioning how much of a reliable narrator she is, but I couldn't help but think the whole time, I was like, we haven't seen how he really acts. Maybe that's totally on purpose, and maybe we'll get to it later, but I hate him. I hate him so much.
I think that the character of Patty, Mary Hollis in Bowdoin, is really important because she is the one who's in both worlds. And she, because I thought the same thing, Joey. I was kind of like, well, what if he's not that bad? What if this is just her perception of him being like a goofball and jumping on the bed and stuff? But when she says, like, oh, there's no money in your account, like, she's the one who knows the, like, almost, I almost makes me wonder if actually what is in the real world is worse than what we see.
I 100% agree with that. I absolutely think that he is a monster in real life. And she processes him as a sitcom. Just that's how she lives. That's how she endures it.
Yeah. Because the stuff that he does, like taking your money. Oh my God. Like, I was devastated for her at that point.
Yeah. There's sort of like a quality to her performance where I'm just, you know, there's a part where someone straight up asks her, why doesn't she leave? Why doesn't she, when she comes up with this plan of doing stuff to him, that I don't know if they're going to continue with that. I assume they are, but it was sort of like, I had the same question. I was like, why doesn't she just go? And I was like, there's a reason why she's not going. There has to be a reason why she's not going. It can't just be out of like a sort of like fear of change or something like that. Right. But I did wonder, I was like, what if in the real world, he's like an abusive, horrible, manipulative, because that's how he is on, that's how like a sitcom sort of forgives a character like that. It's sort of like backtrack, almost like forgives a character's horrible, stupid actions. But I started to wonder, when we go to the sitcom part of it, her feelings from the real world are lingering so heavy in the sitcom world. And it's just like, that's what I think is so brilliant about the show, is that it's flipping back and forth, but the emotional integrity of the show is really bleeding into both parts through Annie Murphy's performance.
Yeah, that's beautifully said, Joey.
Excellent. Golf clap for you.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah, and Megan, I agree with you in one thing that you said about, and many things that you said, obviously, but Mary Hollis in Bowdoin is the key to try to figure out sort of what is actually at stake here, what is actually going on here, because I feel like she over the four episodes that I've seen, they don't become friends, right? They're not friends, they're neighbors, but she becomes more open to Allison. And I watch this and I think, okay, so you have assumed that Allison is some sort of empty-headed moron because she sticks with this guy who you obviously hate. But now you're learning that she hates him too. And so now you're starting to respect him more, respect her more. Mary Hollis's character is Patty. Patty is starting to respect Allison more gradually as the series goes on. So I do think she, you know, because she roughly gives the same performance in the comedy world and in the dramatic world, she is sort of sarcastic in both places. It's like she's the piece that never changes. I'm not saying it nearly well as Joey could, but
no, you said it well. That's right. She is like the constant between the two worlds. Well, besides Allison.
Well, even Allison, I mean, she kind of reacts to things. She's in the first episode, the first two episodes, she sort of reacts to things like, oh, shucks. Oh, darn, my table got broken or whatever. As she progresses through three and four, she is less laugh tracky and more devastated. It's the drama starts bleeding more into the sitcom.
Keep thinking about how, if you look at this relationship as a sitcom, like how it's an abusive relationship, if you remove the laugh track in ways, like, you know, he has an anniversary party for them, but he ignores her the whole time. She loves that damn Pottery Barn table from Goodwill, you know, and he breaks it and then like pieces it back together, kind of in hoping to like, you know, he does a lot of abusive things, like, you know, the money stuff, like not telling her and gambling away all that money. I just keep thinking, he's just a very abusive character. And it's weird to look at other shows now, like, I mean, I don't think that Doug on King of Queens is abusive necessarily, but there are tendencies within those shows where the nag wife maybe is onto something.
Yeah, I also think there's something going on with Allison. Every now and again has these what appear to be migraines, but yes, there's like a almost like a staticky TV sound that's happening.
Yes.
There's something going on there. And I have seen on Twitter, someone did refer to, I'm glad that they hid the twist. So there's, but I don't know what the twist is. And I tried to Google it and I couldn't find anything, you know, within like 2 minutes. So of course I gave up,
wow.
there is some kind of twist there, but it's not yet revealed.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder what it is. Well, I'll keep watching.
Although
I will say that AMC is a pain in the ass, the whole Premiere thing. I thought that because I have AMC that I could log into Premiere, but I couldn't. So I had to do like a trial to watch it and then quit the trial. But I'm like, that's pretty stupid, AMC. Like, I want to see the whole thing.
I don't know about it's week to week.
What?
It's week to week. So
yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, like, I want to be able to, that's not what I meant, I guess. I want to be able to watch it, like, and not have to, like, download the app for it and then put my credit card information and then cancel the app. So now I'm going to watch it, like, week to week on AMC, the channel. But in order to watch it ahead of time, I watched it on the app and they made you put in your credit card information. They wouldn't let me use it, even though I have AMC. I thought that was pretty shitty.
The AMC Plus rollout was not very, clear.
Yeah.
AMC Plus has been around for a little bit, but I don't know if anyone's like, I'm getting AMC Plus. It's not like that. I can just give you my login.
Okay.
No one heard that.
No one heard that at all.
No one heard that at all. I'll give you my login.
This will continue. Obviously, there have been 4 episodes available for critics who I think are largely getting this wrong. I think they're reading the show wrong. I don't see in many reviews a conversation point about her necessarily. I think that people really start, critics have so far really focused in on that sitcom-y aspect and they're uncomfortable with where it's going, I guess. I don't know. I feel like critics are definitely getting it wrong. I mean, it's as it's gone out and you start to see more and more reviews, the Rotten Tomato score has gone up, the Metacritic score has gone up. But I think there are some of those critics that saw it early, I personally feel completely misread the show.
Yeah. Do you think WandaVision hurt it in some way? Because I mean, WandaVision got glowing reviews right away. And I feel like this is similar. Do you think that they're like misreading it because of that? I don't know.
I don't know. Possibly. I don't know. I mean, when I watched it, you know, they're similar in terms of its basic construct about, you know, sending up sitcoms or reevaluating sitcoms in a different light. But, WandaVision, I don't know. I just didn't put the two together in my head as I was watching Kevin Can Wait. Yeah. Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
Oh, I did. I thought it was so much like meta type of take on it, I guess.
Well, I think the real comparison might come with how they handle the realization of why that device is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's obviously maybe the main difference is that, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, WandaVision people, I'm sure people will correct me. If WandaVision is sort of like an unconscious way or an unconscious, she doesn't know she's really doing it, and there's a lot more confusion about it. But I feel like maybe, I don't know, maybe Allison and Kevin Can Wait is doing it consciously on purpose in order to sort of survive that. It's obviously both tied to trauma in both. Yeah, that's all.
So what you're saying is those comparisons will have to wait until we know a bit more of what's going on with Kevin Can Fuck Himself in terms of the reveal and why it's being looked at that way.
I think so. Because I think, I mean, especially because WandaVision was a limited series. It was sort of a standalone thing that is like, I'm not sure since this is, I mean, I don't even know technically how this is being classified.
I was wondering about that too.
It's you know, the discourse over where this gets placed. I assume they would go more for a drama series angle. Not to position it for an awards thing, but I'm just saying, you know, it's an ongoing series where WandaVision was a standalone limited series, so I'm not sure how they would navigate that future seasons. Now, granted, this is after two episodes, so I don't know what's going to happen in season two or three, so who knows?
Right. Well, yeah, and that confusion about, I think this is being kind of marketed as a comedy, and it's, you know, obviously it is a sitcom, but I would say that the reasons for it being a sitcom are pretty, I feel very convinced, are going to push it into a drama territory. Plus, it's an hour. It's 45 minutes, right? It's more of a traditional drama length. But I would argue that by the time you get through the end of the first season, you will look at this as a drama series. Because once you realize why it is being viewed that way, that will push it into the drama category.
Mm.
Just my guess. I don't know how this ends. But Annie Murphy, fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. There are bits and pieces of maybe some Alexis quirks in there, or some looks that she has or something. I mean, we love Alexis so much that, you know, we're going to see that in there. But I would argue that, you know, totally different characters, totally different ways of playing it. She plays these dramatic scenes beautifully, I think. She can do comedy, she can do drama. I mean, I'm just blown away by how great she is in the show.
Yeah, she's really good. And I'm glad that, like, you know, you always get worried about when somebody has such a big breakout role, like how, like, even if this show doesn't do well, she's still like, this is a great part.
Oh yeah. If this show tanks or whatever, if it doesn't get picked up, which I don't know why AMC wouldn't pick it up, because unless it's just, they only want zombie shows. She escapes this with, escapes means it has a negative connotation to it. She walks away from anything that happens with the show with nothing but glowing reviews.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will say, Mary Hollis Imogen is great in it too. You get to see more of her as the season goes on. The two episodes that you guys haven't seen, she's definitely a bigger presence there. So, and I think as noxious and toxic as he is, Eric Peterson plays the character that he is supposed to play. He's very funny. He's very good.
The cast and the sitcom world is all great. Like, Brian Howe as his dad is really good. His buddy, Neil, is Alex Bonifer, is really good. Yeah. I just think they're all, like, as somebody who loves these types of, I do love these type of shows. They're nailing it. Like, it's funny, and they're totally, it's a believable, you know, world where because like I said, you could easily have done it where it's just like, kind of like a real sitcom, but not really. But this is like something that people would watch.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And we started this conversation with production design. I want to go back to production design. I don't even know who did the production design. It's not written on the Wikipedia page, and I'm too lazy to go to look it up right now. Production design is fantastic. I mean, it's like they have two sets for this entire house.
And they don't, right? Like, I was obsessed with that the whole time, because I kept thinking, also, cinematography is amazing.
Well, the lighting, too. The lighting makes it so...
Yeah. But in episode three, there's a sitcom plot about a chili cooking contest between Kevin and Neil, who can make the best chili. And in the sitcom world, he brings in a papier-mâché pig because he's going to cook his own pig out back, and then he's going to use that to make chili. And so it's very obviously fake. Like, it's a papier-mâché thing. And then something happens to her. I'm not going to spoil that, but there's something that happens to her that is pretty sad. And then when it comes to the real world, they don't have a papier-mâché pig anymore. They have this horribly charred, mangled pig that is roasting on a spit. And it just so perfectly epitomizes the dichotomy, the cartoonish versus gory graphic reality of the two halves of the show.
Wow.
The production design was done by Tony Fanning, who did Castle Rock. He did some of Better Call Saul. The Normal. He won an Emmy for The West Wing.
Oh, he did. He did Lemony Snicket too.
Like Amistad, Spider-Man, like the first of 80,000 Spider-Man movies. he did the production design for Hamlet 2.
I love Hamlet 2.
That's why I brought it up.
Thank you.
So Vulture has an article about the production design, and it is the same. It is the same set, just lit differently.
That's amazing. I was wondering about that.
I think I. Sorry, I'm just trying to. I glimpsed a headline before. It's a long article, and clearly I'm not going to read it while we're on this podcast. But I believe it is the same set, just a bit different.
Go ahead, read it. Oh, wait.
Well, the blurb from it is production designer Tony Fanning used the same sets for locations that show up in both formats, angling out the two sides for multicam, and then dot 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 dot. I guess I can hint. I can search up same sets. This must be incredibly. Yes, here we go. Oh, God damn it, go away. Angling out two sides for multicam purposes and sliding in a fourth wall and a ceiling for the single. So it's the same set, but it's they build out the room for the. Oh wow, this is really interesting. I wonder if enough information, I mean, it's way too early to be talking about Emmys for 2022, right? But I wonder if enough information comes out about this, if some of the crafts are not picked up in Emmy nominations, just knowing all of the steps they had to go through.
Were they on the list?
No. It's not for this year. It's for next year.
Oh, for next year. Yeah. Oh,
it's,
yeah.
That's one that it's way early.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. For sure.
Anyway, well, we will continue to keep up with Kevin Ken F himself and report out on that once we know more about what's going on. We can revisit the show and see if it jumped the shark or if it stuck the landing of its presumably first season.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Joey, you could go first.
Sure. I'm going to keep going with Underground Railroad, like both of you. And then I am excited for two reality shows dropping. One of them is Making It, which is a very pleasant crafts reality show hosted by Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman, where it's very pleasant people make stuff with yarn you know, it's basically porn for people who go to Michael's. It's really good. And then the season 6 premiere of RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars is this week on Paramount Plus. So, Megan, if you need my password for that, you can have that too.
I have Paramount Plus. There's so many different, like, this is, you know, that line in He's Just Not That Into You where Drew Barrymore's like, oh, I go on, like, hot or what would she say? I'd check my AOL to see if he messaged me, and then I go into my MySpace, and like there's so many different ways to be rejected. I feel like there's so many different ways to watch television now. It's and even just RuPaul's Drag Race in general. Like you can go to Logo, you can go to VH1, you can go to Paramount Plus. This is too much. Anyway, sorry, that's for that tangent. But everybody should watch Dave this week because it is the single most homoerotic scene I've ever seen, period. Oh. Like, the opening sequence is bonkers. Like, it's bonkers. It blows away. Like, I've never seen anything like it. And I have been enjoying this season. I'm also going to try to keep watching Underground Railroad. I'm going to try to start Hacks, hopefully. I would like to go back to Lovecraft Country, too, just to try to get pick up some of these shows that I've missed. Yeah, I think that's about it for now. Oh, and Drag Race, of course.
Joey, did you want to say something?
No, that's it. Oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry.
What happened?
Oh, check your messenger.
Okay.
So, I am on holiday this week. And holiday. So I am hoping to finally get around to showing some classic movies to my son. So we'll see if that actually happens, because all he wants to watch is Loki on Disney Plus. Yeah, that's a thing that's happening. I'm going to try to catch up on Underground Railroad. Watch some more of Dave. And I didn't ask you, Megan. We probably should have talked about that here on this podcast. What did you think of the pilot of the second season?
It's weird. I mean, it's definitely a weird show. I know I've seen some people grumble about it. Like, I don't get it on Twitter, but I think it's just you got to stick with the story, I feel like. And I think people are going to be pretty freaked out by this new episode that's coming up on Wednesday. It's just the opening moments are just bizarre. They're utterly bizarre.
I like it. Yeah. It's really good. Help me remember what happened to his wife in the end of the first season.
You mean his girlfriend?
Girlfriend. Did she leave him?
Yeah, because they're at that wedding and he is kind of ignoring her the whole time, and she just kind of says like you basically says he's like a narcissist and
right.
Kind of she leaves him.
All right. I was waiting for her to show up, and then I'm like, I kind of remember that she left him. So,
how many episodes did you watch?
I've only seen one. I've only seen the one that takes place in Korea.
Okay, yeah, the second one's good too, and I might even rewatch them because I was doing work while I was watching them, but I was so itching to watch it that I was like, I really want to see it. But the third episode is ridiculous.
And since I'm also on holiday, I would like to be able to go to a movie since my family is fully vaccinated now. But there's really not anything I want to go see. I guess we can go see A Quiet Place. Have either of you seen it?
No.
Not yet.
I just don't feel the need to see it.
I know. I haven't either, to be honest. Even though I've heard it's good.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. I just... Am I that lazy that I just don't feel like getting out to see a good movie anymore? Joey, I know you've been to the theater like 16 times since you've been vaccinated, but...
Three, but thanks.
It's three more than I have.
Yeah, I haven't been out yet. I'm waiting for Old.
I'm waiting for that Escape Room sequel.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't know. We'll see. But that's pretty much... it that's playing of interest, unless I wanted to see Cruella or In the Heights on the big screen, which neither of those screens like I will at this point. Anyway, so does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3 M's contributors, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Boy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.